This is a Truth for Today recording. Oscar M. Baker is speaking, and this is our sixth lesson in a study of Daniel. Now, the last time we were in the ninth chapter, and we got down to the 17th verse, right in the midst of a prayer that Daniel is making for his people Israel, because of their captivity, all the things that they have suffered because they disobeyed, or idolatrous, and so on. He's confessing the sins of his people, identifying himself with them. And he says then in verse 17, "Now therefore, O our God, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplications, and cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is desolate, for the Lord's sake. O my God, incline thine ear and hear. Open thine eyes and behold our desolations, and the city which is called by thy name. For we do not present our supplications before thee for our righteousness, but for thy great mercies." Very nice way of putting it, isn't it? And they had no righteousness. None of us do. We can't present our righteousness in any petition to God whatever. We have to leave that out. There's no boasting. Even Paul, the great apostle, spoke of himself as the chief of sinners. And he had reason to say that, I'm sure. And so here is sort of a model prayer for us to take our place as sinners before God, for it tells us in the Word that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And a lot of people say amen to that, not thinking that they are included too. But it just happens a couple of verses before that, that is speaking of the believers. And it's believers who all of them, everyone can say, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Verse 19, O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, hearken and do. Defer not, for thine own sake, O my God, for thy city and thy people are called by thy name. Just tabulate these and note these items in this verse here. The first word is hear. The next is forgive. The next one is hearken or listen. And do, that is, do something about it. Defer not, that is, don't wait. And do it for thine own sake, not for their sake. For thy city and thy people are called by thy name. And whilst I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, we heard of him in the last lesson, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And so here is the one who is to tell him the times and so forth. And we're getting pretty close to that here, just a few verses. That Gabriel is going to tell him times and seasons. And it is well for us to study those yet today, even though they may not concern us, these particular ones here. Yet, as I said in my last introduction, that we should know all of this as a background to what we have in our dispensation today. And he informed me, and talked with me, and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. And skill and understanding come from the Lord, do they not? At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. This is said to a man who's a Jew of the royalty but mutilated, became a eunuch, a prisoner in an enemy country, a servant, a slave, yet given high position of authority. And here he is spoken of as one greatly beloved of God. Well, there's a chance for you and me, maybe, to be called greatly beloved. Wouldn't that be something? Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision. Now, folks, I think it'd be a good time for you to take a sheet of paper, an old envelope, your pencil, and follow me on making a little diagram here of this so you can see this prophecy. It won't take very much, make it just a few crude lines. All right. You may have to shut off for a minute to get ready here, but don't go clear to the edge of your paper, but draw across your paper a line. Don't make a difference how long it is. And that line will be represented by verse 24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city. 70 weeks. Now, we understand that these weeks are weeks of years. So that's 490 years determined on the people and the holy city. Don't ever forget that and separate those two. You must not divorce them. The people and the city. Now, at the beginning of your line, you can mark it 405 B.C. And it says 77s, 70 weeks, that'd be 490 years. If you figure 490 years from 405 B.C., you'll come to A.D. 85, which you can put at the other end of your line. A.D. 85, that's 490 years. Now that represents the number of years that are determined upon the people and on the holy city. It's a guarantee, is it not, that they will be connected with the city for that period of time? All right. Now, what is going to be done during this 70 weeks, 490 years? To finish the transgression, Israel's going to do some transgressing yet? Oh, yes. The history of that 490 years, what we've had of it, full of it. And to make an end of sins, finally, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and remember, everything has to be paid for, paid in full, the debts canceled, and so forth, in all iniquity, and bring in everlasting righteousness at the end of the 70 years, and to seal up the vision and the prophecy to finish what has been prophesied and the vision given, and to anoint the most holy. Wow. The most holy. Well, the Holy of Holies. Your note says that, and probably that's it. That's what holies means, Holy of Holies. In other words, there will be a temple, and it will have a place, a Holy of Holies, for the worship again. Now that takes in the full length of this little line that you just made. And these are the items. Now we'll have something to add to that. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and rebuild and build Jerusalem unto Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 80 days, and so on. All right, now, on the left side, your line, make a little wiggly line there for just a little way, and over at the left of it, put down the date 454 B.C. Now that is when the commandment was given to Jeremiah to restore and to build Jerusalem. And from that until the time of Messiah the Prince, when he shall be come into the world, shall be 7 weeks and 82 days. All right, now that little wiggly line I told you to put over there on the left, mark that as 7 weeks. Just put a 7 above it. Then over, about two-thirds of the way in your straight line you have from the left, I put a little mark or dividing point and make that Messiah the Prince, or that is the birth of Christ. And after the 82 days, shall Messiah be cut off. That's his death. But not for himself. Now, that cut off time will come right after the one that I put in there for the birth of Christ, just shortly after that. It's only a little while. He died when he was about 33 and a half, or something like that. He died in 29 A.D. And that could be the date for that, his death. His coming, then, would be 4 B.C., or minus 4. And his death there would be 29 plus, or A.D. That gives you some lines. Now, from the going forth of the commandment, turn to your extreme left now, at your wiggly line, up to where the Messiah is cut off, the 7 weeks, and that's up to the city and the people, and 82 days, then from that time up until his being cut off. And then it says, the streets shall be built again and a wall, even in troublous times. And after the 82 days shall the Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. Well, now, I've mixed you up just a little bit in here because I wasn't watching closely. We have until the cutting off of the Messiah, we have the 7 weeks and 82 days. But after that, shall Messiah be cut off. And that, as we said, was AD 29. So, we have there then, 62 weeks plus the 7 weeks. Now going on, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. That is, this beast, this Antichrist, he'll make a covenant with many, that is, of the people, for 1 week, or 1 7-year. And that'll be the last of these weeks that we're talking about in the long line. And so it'll be the 70th week the last week, the very last. And there'll be a covenant made. But in the midst of that week, after 3.5 years, he shall cause this sacrifice and the oblation to cease, which in our last lesson we talked about and how it had been done once before in the time of Antiochus Epiphanes. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, that is, until the end of it. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. In other words, this beast that's coming on the line is going to make everything desolate as far as Israel's concerned. He's going to try to wipe out everything that has to do with their religion. And of course, when you get into further revelations concerning that, Matthew 24, and the revelation, so on, you'll find some more details of how some of that is going to come out. Now, just for reviewing a little bit, you have your wiggly line at this arc, which is 7 weeks, and then you have 405. Now, from 405, right on through the 70 weeks, will take you to AD 85. And that is when the Lord comes, the 19th chapter of the Revelation. If you want to get it that way. Now, you have your 29. After that, put in a little parenthesis, a couple of lines just to cut off a small portion there in your line. And at the beginning of that will be 64. That's AD 64. And there is where Paul makes his statement in Acts 28:28 that the salvation of God be sent to the Gentiles. That's where Israel is cut off, divorced, according to Hosea chapters 3 and 4. And then after a certain time, and it says 2 days, in chapter 6:2, Israel be restored. So it gives us some idea that the present interval in which we're living now, and which was not in prophecy, hid from ages and generations, never made known until Apostle Paul made it known, that this is spoken of as being 2 days. And if a day is 1,000 years in the sight of the Lord, well, then in round numbers it may be that this period in which we are now living will be 2,000 years in length, starting at AD 64. In other words, the prophecy that is to be fulfilled after Acts 28:28 will be fulfilled, but just extended 2 days or something of that kind. And then come in again. This is just a parenthesis in the year's program. Now, don't get me wrong. Somebody just recently wrote about that all of this was just a parenthesis in God's earthly program, Israel's program, and so on. Well, that all may be true as far as the earth's viewpoint is concerned. When you take it from a different viewpoint, you'll find that what is being fulfilled today, what is being done, was in God's mind before all else, before the overthrow, before Israel ever thought of, before the nations were thought of, before people were on the earth. God had in mind a creating and making a people who would fill up the gap left in the heavenly places by those who followed Satan and didn't get there. Well, there is the problem. But God does a roundabout way of getting to it. He has to prepare for it and prepare people for it and so on. And so he renovates the earth, as you find in Genesis 1, after the creation and the overthrow, starting in verse 3 of chapter 1. He renovates the earth, puts a man in it, and eventually a woman, to start a race of what we call people, and probably what the animals out in the forest would call us too, people, and not having any other name maybe. But the whole thing was from a purpose way back of there being a redemptive work for the creation. For Satan, when he fell, when he rebelled, brought ruin upon God's creation, at least upon our solar system. And so you see, back of all of this is a purpose. But there's a purpose even before that purpose. And that's the one that has to do with a mystery. Because even before Satan's fall, before he brought ruin into God's creation, God knew it was coming and he made plans, choosing a people that would take that place that would never be taken by Satan and those who follow him. And so, we are told very plainly in Paul's prison epistles that this choosing and this plan was before the overthrow, before Satan's fall. Now you can look at this little picture you have here and get an overall idea of it, you see. What is going on? And that God's first and main purpose was not particularly with the earth, but to fill up the heavenly places. So the earth was created to make some more created beings who would take that place because his first creation had failed. Now, folks who are studying the mystery want to know what is truth for today. You see, this, all of this is a pretty good background to see the why and the wherefore. Otherwise, we can't see why God is doing such and such. We're told that the church is now making known or manifesting the manifold wisdom of God to principalities and powers in the heavenly places. We're told that in Ephesians. So it has more than one purpose, probably, but at least it is a pleroma, a fullness, which fills up the gap as left in the heavenly places by those who didn't make it. Now, there are those who did, and they're there at that place today, principalities, powers, mights, and dominions. But you can go all through your Old Testament and never find a statement to that effect. We have, as we mentioned here in Daniel, we have an archangel Michael, we have a great angel Gabriel, and some other angels mentioned, and even on the other side, angels who could delay the messenger that came to Daniel when he was receiving his revelation. So I wanted you to make the little diagram, if you haven't made it, or even back over it and do it again, and get it sort of pictured in your mind, the progress being made here in concerning Israel. And of course, Daniel is particularly prophesying concerning Israel. He's not prophesying concerning the church. And Daniel had very little to say about the nations before Israel came on the scene. So, here then we are. Well, let's see, where did I leave all? Oh yes, we left off at the end of chapter 9. Got the talking here. All right then, these prophecies for the overspreading of abominations, making it desolate and so on. Well, that is ones to come. Now remember this, that Jerusalem has been destroyed more than once. Remember also, it was not the capital of Israel and was not even all of Jerusalem. The city was not under their domination until the time of David. All those years of the judges, 450 years, and up through the kingdom of Saul and up to the kingdom of David, Jerusalem had been Jebusalem, and have been inhabited by a people and fortified so well that Israel never was able to take it, or probably didn't make too much attempt to, weren't led to. But it Salem means, that's its old name, peace. Comes from Hebrew, shalom. And Jerusalem comes from Jebus, because the Jebus, J-E-B-U-S, the Jebusites, were the people who inhabited and had it. Now there's another little bit of history to add to help with the understanding. That God had chosen this place for his people Israel. Well, why? The question comes up, why did Israel have to have such a hard time taking the land? That comes up here and is very appropriate right now. They had to take Jericho and kill a lot of people and all the other cities. It was one battle after another, all the way through. Well, I'll tell you why. In the first place, Abram was called out of Ur of the Chaldees. And he went as far as Haran, just north of Palestine, and stayed there until his father died. So he lived 25 years there instead of going on. And it says, and when he came to the land, the Canaanite was in the land. Well, there was a delay, and its results. Israel came out of Egypt, and it took them about 30 years, 38 years to make a few days' journey. But the worst of it was when they came to Kadesh Barnea. They'd been organized, been given their law, everything all set and ready, and they failed. They didn't know that the people's hearts had turned practically to water, and they would have welcomed them in because they'd heard of their plagues on Egypt, and they're getting across the Red Sea, the miraculous works of their God, and so on. And they were ready to welcome Israel in. They failed. They lost 38 years in the wilderness. And when they did go in, these people had about forgotten about the events and knew that these folks had wandered around in the wilderness getting nowhere. And so they were ready to fight. You and I can do it in our own lives. We can delay doing the thing we ought to do. And then find by the time we're ready to do it, the Canaanites in the land. And things are very, very difficult. We have to change our plans and everything. Now that's been true all through history. This isn't just true of this particular one here, but you can go back and find other instances too. Procrastination is a thief of time, an old saying. All right, now we've got a little bit of time. Chapter 10. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, and here it's called Cyrus now, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar, and the same was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision. My, that's giving us a little bit of a foretaster and arousing our curiosity, isn't it? In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all, till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. He was fasting for some reason. And in the 24th day of the first month, that be in the spring, about in our April, I was by the side of the great river, which is Bidekel, and see, what was the name of that? Oh, I've forgotten. Now, let's see here. Maybe I'll find it. Oh, the Tigris. I should have known. I should remember that. All right, he's here by the river. Then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins are girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like the beryl, and his face was appearance of lightning, and his eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. Now, folks, these things are all emblematic and significant, and I won't take time here to go into this. I have done it when I have talked on the picture of Christ in Revelation 1, which very similar to this in some ways. And each of these metals has a significance and their shininess and so forth. But I don't need to dwell on that right now because it isn't too important in this. Well, the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. My Daniel alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me saw not the vision. A little like Paul on his way to Damascus. The men heard a noise, but they didn't understand anything that was being said to Paul. They knew there was a great light and all that sort of thing, but they didn't know what it was about. And so here it was with Daniel. There were men with him, but they didn't see a thing or hear a thing that he was experiencing there. But they knew that something was going on, and they got to shaking and quaking. People are a little bit scared of the supernatural, you know. Therefore, I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me. For my comeliness was turned to me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Well, folks, this is just a taste of what happens when one sees the greatness and majesty of God and the wonderful things concerning Christ. We don't see enough of these things today. We don't have the vision that we should have to see things as they are. But my, oh my, how we read through the descriptions in Paul's last epistles, ordinarily called the prison epistles, and there we see the revelation of God in all his majesty, more so than in the book of Revelation. Yet I heard the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. And behold, an hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. And he, the hand, the owner of the hand, and he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, there it is again, had that before, didn't we? Understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand, and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words. It didn't take any time for Daniel's prayers to get through to God, did it? Wasn't any barrier of any kind to this intercourse, spiritual intercourse of man with God. Now, if we were to send one of our great spaceships to the heavenly places, to the throne of God, I wonder how many billion years it would take to get there. And hear a prayer but reach God almost instantly. We don't know. With all of our science and all of our learning and so on, we don't know the first thing about spiritual things. It's just so far from the things of the earth and from our senses, our knowledge and so on, of all of it we can get and all the wisdom we have penetrated very little into the spiritual universe. To understand God and to know His Son. Now he heard it from the first, what he says in verse 13, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the king of Persia. Now Michael, one of the chief princes, and sometimes called the archangel here, is seemingly the leader of the armies of the heavenly places, as we find in chapter 12 of the Revelation. But it looks to me as if Daniel was making a lot of progress in contacting God. Not many of our prayers ever make much of an impression, or as far as we know, do they? But Daniel got results. Well, he was beloved. You go back through the first of the book, which we've been over, and see the trials that he had and his faithfulness and so on, and you can see why he was beloved, even standing in the lion's den with his mouth open and singing praises of God, and the lions with their mouths clamped shut couldn't open them. They all had lockjaw. They couldn't hurt Daniel. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people, Israel, in the latter days. For yet the vision is for days, for many days. And when he had spoken such words unto me, I set my face toward the ground, and I became dumb. Now the word dumb means you can't say anything. You know, we use that word today, meaning they don't mean anything. Well, that isn't it at all. Animals are dumb because they can't speak, not because they don't know anything. And so, Daniel lost his power of speech. He couldn't say a thing. And behold, one like the similitude of the sons of men touched my lips, probably an angelic being. Then I opened my mouth and spake, and said unto him that stood before me, O my Lord, by the vision of my sorrows are turned upon me, and I have retained no strength. For how can the servant of this my Lord talk with this my Lord? For as for me, straightway there remaineth no strength in me, neither is there breath left in me. Then there came again, and touched me one like the appearance of a man, and he strengthened me. Now we have some little things, and I noticed that many years ago I underlined some things. I noticed that I underlined over here, way over here in chapter 10, third year as King of Cyrus, and then also he understood. Down in verse 3, I ate no pleasant bread. Verse 5, man clothed in linen. And down in verse 10, underlined red, and a hand touched me. Verse 11, greatly beloved, as I had it marked once before where it occurred. And I think I slightly shaded in verse 13, chief princes, one of the chief princes. And then we get down here to verse 18, and I have underlined in red, strengthen me. And he said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be unto thee. Be strong, you. Be strong. And when he had spoken to me, I was strengthened, and said, let my Lord speak, for thou hast strengthened me. Then said he, Knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. Now here are some funny things going on. Between the throne of God and Daniel are some powerful beings. They're called princes and princes of nations. And I don't think there are any good princes either, excepting that Michael stood for his people Israel. So they had a prince too, and he was greater than the rest of them. Could it be that the nations of the earth today have satanic princes directing their steps, their doings, and so on? Doesn't it look a little like it? And finally, in the end times, they'll all be gathered together in one great kingdom, and they will march in the latter part of the millennium with Satan at the head against Jerusalem and the people of Israel in their final effort to crush them. They'll be annihilated. That's a little bit of what is coming. Well, but I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth, verse 21. And there is none that holdeth with me in these things, but Michael your prince. In other words, these two were the only ones that were given this message and were together on it. It was not commonly known. Other princes evidently didn't know about it. But at least these two have to do particularly with Israel, and they bring the message. Are we receiving any messages like that today? Or do we have a silent heaven? Well, we have had pretensions down through the ages since Israel were cut off and the Gentiles come in again at Acts 28:28 AD 64. We've had many reports of such things, many claims of men coming to be the Messiah, and that the end times are coming, and they've been prophesied and so forth. And things are going on just as usual. But when we were making the little chart, and we had all these years figured up, and the like, and then we found there in Hosea that there'd be 2 days in between. And we had figured up from our first prophecy, when you put that down, that AD 85 would be the coming of the king and the setting up of the millennial kingdom. And Hosea 6:2 says 2 days. Now, if that were 2 days, 2,000 years, it might be just round numbers, I don't know. That'd take us to about 2,085 for Christ to come and set up his kingdom. And here we're in 1985. 1,900 years late for the prophecy to be fulfilled. My. And another 100 years yet to go. Well, that may be all true. Of course, I'm not particularly interested in it because I don't think I'll be around here then anyhow. Not figuring on it, at least. And I think God reveals to us and emphasizes the things that are needful for us to know. And there are a lot of things that's not necessary for us to know. And we can wonder about them a little bit. If they don't fit in with our particular time and message, why, go on. That's about the best that we can do. Now, we have 2 more chapters to do of Daniel. I don't know just how long it'll take. I haven't tried it. It's been a long time since I've gone through the book of Daniel with our Bible class many years ago. Let's have a little prayer. Dear Father, We are thankful that there was a man like Daniel to inspire us to do thy will and to set affection on things not of this particular earth. Thankful for the lessons we have and thy word warning us and pointing out to us glorious things for us today if we will only believe and accept them. We do ask that thou would guide and direct us, give us an understanding of thy message, that we may live as we ought, that we may speak as we ought, that we might receive a crown through Christ, we ask it.